date.
Oh, Galen, here I come.
We have Chair Galen Crum here from the Osage Nation Ranch.
Hey. Gotta have all our members back there.
Well, we, right now, I need Brandy, I need a quorum. Nope, I know.
Good, long time no see.
Yeah, I haven't seen you in a long time, Sam.
You are on the agenda per the request of Speaker Tillman, I don't know. And you have the floor.
Okay. As you can see, we don't have as big of an update for you prepared, but I'm certainly willing to answer any questions you might have. And we did put together some money matters that happened since we last sat in here and gave you a full report, you know, during session in the fall. We've been continuing on with our quest to add to our cattle herd. And if you look at the little handout of what we've bought and what we've sold during this time, well, you'll see that we've purchased 431 cattle, basically. In the, these are all mother cows, be spring calvers, that we've purchased in the last 6 weeks. So we've been adding on to our spring herd. We're trying to switch over. We were about balanced up last year, falls to springs, and that happened kind of by accident because that's what we could add to at the time. We add to them when we had the funds, and then when they're available, then when we had the grass. And so, but we really like to have about a 70-30 split on springs, or maybe 60-40 split to springs to fall calvers. So we're these are all spring calving cows that you see there. One significant little story about those, if you notice the 115, the last purchase we made, those are first calf heifers. We've been keeping heifers. We kept 63 this year, and we kept approximately the same number last year, 60. But we had an opportunity to buy these really nice well-bred heifers that had been pelvic measured and all the things for calving ease and the right heifer bulls. And we'll be adding quite a little bit of work to our cowboys in the next 6 weeks because these are all to calve in a 60-day period. So they'll be doing their 63 that we kept and 115 first calf heifers. Those of you who know anything about that means, you know, that's a lot of all nights sometimes for them, you know. But we're putting them in places where we can move them in as they get close and watch them and have that happen. The 431 head total that we bought will represent 230 or so additional cattle than what we ran last year. But if you notice over here on the sales, I'll get to those in a minute and tell you what those were about. And we were able to do that without taking any land away from our other primary revenue source, which is lease and outground. You know, as the ranch has developed, as they've had cattle, they didn't just let the land lay idle. They leased it out to people to put both pairs on, and then we also run yearlings. This year we'll be running 580 yearlings. The bids are out on both the pairs and the yearling grass right now. We'll open them up Friday, so we'll know what we've made for, what we'll be making for the rentals. But we were able to do that without taking any ground away. And those of you who have listened to us before and looked at what we were doing, you saw we were spending a lot of money and a lot of resources on spraying and burning and getting those pastures cleaned up. they were neglected for many years. I don't know about when Drummond's had it, but I know that Turner didn't do hardly any of that. And so we have a lot of areas that were infested with invasive species and that sort of thing. And just what we've done in the last 2 years doing that, we were able to get a lot more usable acres out of some of them. And then by moving cattle around, did a little math and getting them in the right, we were able to utilize our usable acres better. So we're able to add about 200 head without taking away a revenue source to do it, which normally we have to do. You know, when we add on, we take a pasture away from somebody who was paying us for that. So, and I think we probably reported last time, but we burned ourselves about 32,000 acres. Our guys did, with the help of the neighbors. You know, we have three fire trucks, and our guys are all fire trained, and some of them work on areas. So that's what we've purchased, and we did that without any influx of money, just from our sales, and of course dipping somewhat into our reserve fund, which we try to keep up because we never know when we're going to need. So, but we'll be having income coming shortly from it. Now on the sales that we did, you see 153 dries and opens. That'd be a pretty typical amount for an outfit that's running 2,000 head that you're going to have. That may show up. So that's probably an expense we're going to look at every year. We're going to need to be purchasing about 200 replacement cows somewhere in that neighborhood about every year. The seven trash she put down, that's not a very kind word for them, but it's ones that really fell apart, older cows that wouldn't market as bred cows, ones that got crippled, you know, knocked down hips, that sort of thing. The 44 head you see represents some bred open or bred broken mouth cows, older cows, that we are starting to slip some of them away because some of the first cattle, when the ranch first started, they bought out some people. In order to do that, they were buying what you call running age cows. They might have been three and they might have been eight. And those ones that are eight need to be sent away someplace while there's still some value to them. So we sorted off 44 head of those and sold them. And then of course the calf crop down there, the 683 calves, that was the ones we've marketed so far of the spring calvers from last year. There was 63 heifers that we kept back out of that bunch. And then we have a few that were sorted off that were too small that we have in there feeding right now. They'll go to market when the time looks right. It's just a handful, about 16 head or so we have on the feed up there. So that's a quick overview of what we've done for money.
Speaker Tillman.
Just briefly, thank you, Madam Chair. Just if anybody on the committee has any questions regarding the presentation Mr. Crum has just delivered, I would yield to you at this time because I'm going to switch to something completely different.
Anyone have any questions? All right.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Crum, I'm going to make some comments and I'm also going to ask some questions as we go forward with concerns to the Osage Nation Ranch. And just for clarification, you are the chairman of the board of
currently,
the Osage
yes.
Nation Ranch Board. And how long have you been in office?
This summer will be my second, 2 years.
Okay.
Year and a half now.
I've always taken a really keen interest in the ranch just because it's one of our nation's largest purchases, assets, if you will. I think we're on maybe a third cycle of board members that have been in the managerial position of the ranch, if I can recall correctly.
None of us that are there now started.
I understand that, yes. Having participated in some of your Osage Nation Ranch Board meetings back in June, July, and August, we had discussed and talked about the extreme urgency and the need for bison fencing. And so that's where I'm going with this. In those meetings, if you recall, I was present, the chief of the tribe was present, and this was some of the terms that you had used at the times was it was an emergency, and I'll get to that. We had used that term, and so it got my attention as being someone that's I have a very keen optical with the ranch. I watch and try to monitor what's going on out there because of the asset and the future that it holds for us. Back in, we started the session, some of the opening remarks by Chief Standing Bear when we started the last regular session, what he recommended to the Congress to exercise extreme extra caution in this session's appropriations when we started out, and why we're there is because Gaming Compact has jeopardized potentially some of the revenue that we're going to be distributed from gaming. Back in September the 4th, 2019, Commerce, Gaming, and Land, and I want to read ONCA 1967 to you real quick, just to recall, this is an act to provide an appropriation to the limited liability company, Osage Nation Ranch, LLC, in the amount of $175,000, and to establish an alternate effective date. The findings, Osage Nation Bison and the Osage Nation Ranch are owned by the Osage Nation and managed by the Osage Nation Ranch, LLC. And for that reason, the Osage Nation should provide the appropriate fencing for its bison. B, upon receipt of this appropriation, the $175,000, the Osage Nation Ranch, LLC, is in the best position to purchase and oversee installation of adequate bison fencing needed for the Osage Nation Ranch. Is that correct?
I'm sure you read it.
Well, there's a law for you. I'm sure you've read it too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
C, for these reasons, the Osage Nation Congress determines an emergency, based on the conversations that we had back in June, July, and August. The Congress determines an emergency is present on the Osage Nation Ranch due to inadequate bison fencing and the associated dangers. So that's ONCA 1967. And during your presentation, we had some handouts that you had brought to the I believe it was the September 4th meeting 2019 when you came in. I sponsored the bill, ONCA 1967, and you brought handouts. These handouts were given to the committee, and they were also distributed to the rest of the Congress, and you're very familiar with what I'm showing you at this point. Okay, at the top, it talks about the Osage Nation Ranch Bison Preserve, 1,251 acres, which is roughly 6 miles of fence, is what we were talking about at the time. So, You were very clear with the fence acreage and the specifics to the fence, approximately 6.5 miles of perimeter fence encompassing the 1,251 acres, 1.4 miles of major roadside frontage. You gave the fence composition, heavy-duty field fence, 39 inches tall, 8 to 10 inches off the ground. 8-foot T-posts spaced 12 feet apart, with every fifth being posted at 10 to foot 2 3/8 pipe post. 3 stands of closely spaced barbed wire 6 inches apart above the field fence, which create a very tight fence approximately 6 foot 8 inches tall. And you have graphics that you provided for us here. So obviously you did a very good job with your homework looking at the Osage Nation Bison Preserve and using the appropriation that was at ONCA 1967 to build this fence. We had got into the conversation, and I went back to the recording, and we had talked about, you had talked about yourself, the vandalism that was occurring out on the ranch, the flooding, the washouts, and the bison wandering from home. Okay, you had talked about that, and that was the emergency need to get this fencing in place. You recovered the bison and put them in a temporary fencing, which is located next to the pens. And I believe we have an illustration here that you also brought where the pens are reflected. The Harrison pens, is that the pens that you were referencing?
No, that'd be wrong. That'd be what we call the bison pens down there, and there's a lot of traps around it.
Is this the bison pens you're reflecting here?
No, this will be the pens that will be adjacent to where the bison preserve will be.
So this is northwest of the bison preserve, like you just said? This illustration.
Yes, it's on the piece of ground that will be the bison preserve.
Okay.
That will be the pens that we will enhance to be able to handle them through there.
And you're going to hold them there for most of the summer, correct?
Not there, but down at the other
pens. Down at the regular pens.
Right. Okay. And we had there are traps, what we call traps around that one down there, that already had some not as good a bison fence we're doing there, but different fence than the others.
Okay, Madam Chair, if I may.
You may, but I wanted to let the committee know it's 11:36. This meeting is scheduled till noon. I allowed ones to go pretty much as long as they wanted because they requested this committee meet. This part will go till 11:50, and I'm going to give the last 10 minutes of the agenda to...
Okay, can I continue? Mr. Crum, you also mentioned that it's getting imperative that we do something about the bison and the fencing. So we all know that the definition of imperative is vital, important, crucial, an essential or urgent thing that you would mention. I'd also like to just briefly mention Article 10 Code of the Ethics Section 8. Tribal officials and employees shall refrain from using tribal positions to improperly influence the deliberations, administrations, or decisions of established board or commission proceedings. During the meeting, Congresswoman Lemon asked if you were going to expand the bison herd. And your response was, that's up to Congress and whatever administration is in place and to decide if they want to add on. That was at 14:50 of the recorded session, and that was your verbatim comment that you had. So Congresswoman asked if you were going to expand the herd, and you said, that is up to the Congress or whatever administration is in place. Isn't that a decision of the Osage Nation Ranch Board and not the Congress or executive administration?
I guess the ownership of the bison.
I understand. Just the question, though, isn't that up to the board?
We would certainly make recommendations of what the grass would hold. I would, because our management would detail on what grass we had and what. I think I wanted more detail on that because there's different ways to manage the bison, either
We're talking about just expanding the herd. Is that up to the board, or is that up to Congress? Is that up to an administration? Because to me, if you go back and read Article 10, the Code of Ethics, we refrain from interfering with you. You make those decisions. Is that correct?
If that's your interpretation, I feel like we cooperate on this. We manage them for the ranch, okay. And so expansion would have to be with the cooperation of the ranch.
Or Congresswoman Whitehorn.
Exactly.
Can I finish?
I believe that the function of the bison preserve is held within the lease. So there's some language in the lease that also would give you a clue to that.
Okay. And what I'm getting at is we had, when you came with a figure of $175,000, which I think we agreed on $150,000 at one of the meetings, but we bumped it up to $175,000. When you came to the meeting in September, Congresswoman Stabler stated that this is kind of backwards because of procurement. She commented, by planning ahead and securing your bid, when you come to the Congress and ask for an exact amount, was the reason you didn't have an exact bid is because it was an emergency.
And it had not been bid out yet by the we were estimating on what the cost was.
Correct.
Estimating labor, all of those things, we felt that this would do it.
But you don't need a procurement if it's an emergency, which is stated in ONCA 1967.
I still understand that we're working through the procurement process. If it was an emergency, I mean, if it was not procurement process, it would have been built 2 years ago.
Congresswoman Whitehorn?
I think I see the point you're getting to. It was declared an emergency by Congress within the.
But based on the conversations we had with the ranch board, and
exactly.
I think those same conversations were had with Chief Stanley.
And the procurement law does allow for emergency
Correct.
Relief.
Have
yes,
you received the $175,000 from the general fund from the Treasury?
I do not believe so. I believe it is any account of ours. Though we have received the $14,000 and some dollars that was
okay,
a grant for materials.
The appropriation from Congress, you have not received that?
Not to my knowledge.
Have you received any bids back from procurement?
No, we have not finished up the procurement process in terms of what we were.
Have you submitted any documents to procurement?
I don't know about documents. I've talked to them about anything. They probably got the first draft of what we wanted to build, but however, we run into some different input about what it might be. It might be cheaper, so we looked at what it was going to be, and then because I understood we were procurement, and we've been through that before, to get to your emergency part, perhaps you're getting to, I'll try and skip and answer maybe your questions ahead. We actually spent money, not a great deal, because we were just redoing the fence that was in there and raising it up higher and more wires for the place that they were at. We knew that between procurement, winter time, getting it all done, that we didn't want those bison. They could not stay where they were at because we were feeding them hay, and we couldn't do that. So we had to turn them back out actually in the pasture that we'd originally held them in. But we've went around the perimeter of the fences wherever it was at. They're staying in pretty well. Once in a while, something to get out. But we've got them pretty well contained until we can get the other one finished.
So the $175,000 of the people's money was appropriated by Congress's statement of the emergency based on my conversations with the board and discussions with the executive branch. So my question to you, was it an emergency or not? Because the fence hadn't been built. And that's 5.5 months ago. So that's $175,000 of the people's money that you came and asked for to build the fence because of bison wandering off, bison running through other people's fences, bison up on Highway 18. And there's pictures of that. It was an emergency. So has there been any discussion or suggestions made to change the name of the preserve? Is it still a bison preserve?
I have no knowledge of any discussions made to change the name.
Okay, so it's still going to be a bison preserve, because you do reference preserve in your Osage Nation Ranch LLC business plan, that it's still going to be a bison preserve. It's still going to be that, correct?
That is the language that is used in our lease agreement that says we are to help the executive or the nation establish where that is and how many acres and agree upon that. And then we are tasked with management of the bison after, well, as long as they exist, I guess.
Congresswoman Lemon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it alludes to something, add to what Speaker Tillman finally got to in his point, is that the bison fence hasn't been built as of yet, and the money has not been released to the ranch. Can you just give us an update then, in your words, on where you're at with the bison fencing, what obstacles, you know, you've had, and excuse me?
There is no progress on the bison fencing.
Mr. Crum, so where are you at in the actual process of it? I would like to give you an opportunity to give an uninterrupted explanation.
The materials that with the grant that we had, we put in as materials, and we needed to spend that money from the grant in order to fulfill that. So the materials have been, they've not been delivered, but the materials have all been identified. We've went through different processes to get the cheapest materials, that sort of thing. We originally started off hoping to put the materials on the bidder, and then we saw that that wasn't going to happen, that we weren't going to be able to be done in time because, of, like I said, we rethought the fencing. We actually went back to something very similar to what it is. We had to check with oil companies about gates and what we could do to rebuild the gates, that sort of thing. We've talked to some of those. Like I said, the fencing, there's been no checks written yet, but the fencing has been selected and bought. So that that will all be paid for by the end of the month, actually. So we have that. We don't really want it delivered just yet. And then I'm totally confused now on what we're supposed to do about the bid process. Speaker has confused me. I thought it would be the regular thing. We would give them the specs and then let out the bids. So if it's an emergency and we're just supposed to do it, why, the bids will go out right away, I can guarantee you, the way we work. So
I think what Joe Tillman's trying to get at, I think, because I've been listening, still can't figure it out, but I think if he's talking about declaring an emergency under the procurement rules, there is a process that has not occurred. I declared an emergency yesterday on a project. I did one earlier this week. We have a procedure. No document has been received requesting an emergency from the ranch. The ranch has been tasked with doing the fencing, and I think they're doing a great job. Now, as far as this ethics reference, I don't know who he's trying to accuse of something. Nothing's been wrong. That's just out of his imagination. Now, nothing's been done wrong, and I don't like the insinuation there is. So nothing's been done wrong. If you want to declare emergency, follow the rules. But we would love to change the procurement rules because they are slow. They are not transparent, in my opinion. But that's the rules we're tasked to follow. We've done a good job. This ranch has done a good job. My administration's done a good job. Jan Heyman's done a good job. And any reference to an ethics violation is way out of line. And Mr. Tillman, I think you ought to apologize to the administration and to Mr. Crum.
Okay. Thank you, Chief. We are going to excuse the ranch board. Our agenda has update from ones you have provided the update, or I'm sorry, not ones, the ranch board. That's specifically what our agenda says is Osage Nation Ranch update. You provided that with your numbers and figures, and we have 10 minutes left, and we are going to move on to agenda number 7, which is consideration of request to fund memorial to the victims of the Osage murders in Fairfax. And you're excused. Thank you for being here and for providing your update.
Okay. Can I make one more comment? No.
No.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
We can put you on a future agenda for a future meeting.
I was just gonna say, if you say no, I leave my body stuff. It wasn't gonna be argument. It was gonna be.
Thank you for being here, Chair.
I would take.
I'll apologize.
Next group. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. One of the points that have been made by Osages I've talked to in the last 8 weeks in visiting about a dozen Osage communities is a question from our people. And these are not prompted questions. And that question is, what is the Osage Nation doing to take advantage of the publicity and the traffic that is to come from the Killer of the Flower Moon movie that we anticipate will make Fairfax a focus of where people want to visit? And my answer is, outside of our visitor center and our whatever the museum wants to do, we are not doing anything to my knowledge. I have been encouraged to bring to the Congress some plans on how to take advantage of that for economic development. And as I was pondering what to tell you, and after getting with the staff, and I've just finished this tour on the strategic plan, just a couple of, well, if you include the college students, we just did that the other night. But I've just finished that, and we haven't come up with any plan. Well, this weekend, I received a call from Joe Connor, and he said the county commissioners of Osage County was going to consider a demolition of the old Osage Big Hill Trading Post building, which I think you all know has had a collapse of one wall. And they were going to consider, the county, who's the owner, was going to consider spending about $200,000 in demolition, and it'll be gone forever. Mr. Connor and other members of the Fairfax community have proposed a memorial to the murdered Osage to be there in place of an empty lot. And to do that, they have some ideas of how to involve the Osage Nation and the Fairfax community and private monies in a project. And I would ask that Mr. Connor address this committee with this idea, and because of the pending action, because the motion to demolish was tabled by the Osage County Commissioners, we have less than 30 days to commit or let them know we, the Osage Nation, is not going to commit. So I'd be willing to call a special session on this subject, depending on really what we think the Congress thinks about it. So with that, Madam Chair, I'd ask Joe Connor.
Dr. Connor? Thank you, Chief. Dr. Connor, I'm sorry, but you have about 5 minutes.
All right.
We're scheduled to end at noon.
All right, let me do a quick pass out.
You'll
this.
You'll have to get that stamped in from our clerk of Congress.
You can do that.
Okay.
And when you get a chance, you can read it to leisure, but I'll go over it.
Thank you.
And then also, this I would like back, but I'm going to pass it around. You can look at it and pass it back to me. It's nothing you can hang on to. I'll tell you what you're looking at here in a minute. As the chief said, Madam Chairperson and members of Congress, a group of us have been working for some time to make sure that the old Big Hill Trading Company not be torn down, that it has sustained severe damage in a tornado. The entire Main Street of Fairfax, as anyone driven through there knows, certainly Randy and others who drive through there often can tell, many buildings, most of the buildings, particularly the ones on Main Street, were damaged, including the two buildings owned by the county, plus a couple of buildings that are under the management of or control of the Fairfax Community Foundation, and some other private buildings were damaged. So severe damage was sustained. We have a plan to turn the Big Hill Trading Company, which is an iconic keystone building in Fairfax, it's the largest building downtown, it's 25,000 square feet, into a commemorative museum for the murder victims of the Osage Reign of Terror, particularly in Fairfax, but also including our ancestors who were also killed elsewhere on the reservation. I have ancestors who were killed here in Pawhuska. I do know about the people also who the book was written about. Those deaths occurred in Fairfax. Since that book has come out, we have had dozens and dozens of visitors. Sometimes busloads come looking. They will drive up down Main Street. We'll identify them, say, or excuse me, what are you here for? Well, we read the book and we're interested in finding out more about the murders. Now, one of the things you need to know is that, like many of the people in Gray Horse and Fairfax communities, you might know, we were very reticent about having this story told. How are the Osages going to be portrayed? Osages made their positions clear in that community about, we do not want to be stereotyped, we do not want to be portrayed in an unrealistic and false way. We made those comments to the movie folks, Mr. Scorsese and company. He assured us that he would be sensitive to these issues. That remains to be seen. What we do know is the book in and of itself has generated a lot of traffic in Fairfax. They come to Fairfax, they stop on Main Street to wander around, to look at the derelict buildings, and they wander off or they wander down to the convenience store and ask one of the young ladies, do you know anything about the Osage murders? And typically the response is, did someone get killed? They don't know anything about that history. Well, that's people in town. Some people do, but we've discovered that many people do not. But the visitors we have hosted, including a group of docents from the Western Heritage and Cowboy Hall of Fame Museum in Oklahoma City, they called probably almost a year ago and asked if they could have a tour of Fairfax and learn about the murders that they had read about. So we hosted a group of about 60 docents from Oklahoma City. I gave them a presentation about the murders, and not the thing that people are concerned about. I did not go into, nor even brought up, the gruesome aspects of how Anna Brown and Henry Roan were murdered. Those things are in the book. Probably will be in the movie. But rather, what I spent my time talking about were the conditions that fermented the desire to defraud us and kill us, which were bigotry, greed, and avarice. Things that many of the people who come and listen to my presentation, I've done it now several different times, they're very sympathetic to that. They want to know not so much about, you know, the bodies and where they were found, they really want to know, why did this happen? So we try to tell them why it happened. Greed, avarice, and bigotry. It was apparent to all of us that it was happening then, and it still happens now. How do we know that? We do know that back in the day, many people who decided to take advantage of us justified that by saying we didn't deserve the oil riches. We weren't entitled to them. It wasn't fair. We were being given special treatment. Now, if any of those words sound familiar to you, they come up frequently, oftentimes, in people who don't understand our history and our legacy here, will come up in modern day conversations. It's not fair that the Osages are treated differently than other people. I've heard that in county commissioner meetings. I've heard it otherwhere, that we should not be treated differently than anyone else. They just do not know history. But the people who are coming to listen about why these murders happened need a place that the real story can be told. The background, why these things happened to us, and hopefully to prevent these things from happening in the future. We're proposing to restore the facade of the old building, repair the roof that's damaged, and stabilize the building. We have an estimate from Beck Design Company, the company architectural firm in Tulsa that rebuilt Bricktown and also is working on the First Americans Museum in Oklahoma City. They've given us an estimate and also consulted with us about the building. Said, you need not to lose this keystone building.
Dr. Connor, I don't want to interrupt you, and I'm sorry, but you have about 1 minute. So.
I'm going to get to the bottom line.
Yes.
They gave us an estimate that was subsequently confirmed by the county's own independent assessor of almost $650,000 to rebuild the facade as it was in the 1920s, put a new roof on it, and stabilize the building. They were within $50,000 of one another, our estimate and the one that the county solicited itself. So we're asking for assistance to help with that. We now have a private donor in Fairfax, an individual who's offered to put up $200,000 for this purpose. The county has stepped away from it. They are interested in demolishing the building. We do not want that to happen. We need your assistance in making this a lasting memory to the Osage people, not just in Fairfax, but all through the former reservation and the place we call home, because we all have been touched by this story, personally and dramatically.
Thank you, Dr. Connor.
Chair. Thank you.
The chair will entertain a motion to adjourn.
One question. It's very pertinent to this information. Who owns this building?
The county.
The county.
Cheryl, second. All those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
We're adjourned.
Second.
Yes, make sure he gets it back, please.